you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
A new element has been discovered on the periodic table, guys. Lawrence Livermore Laboratories has discovered the heaviest element yet known to science. The new element is called governmentium, capital G, lowercase v. It has one neutron, 25 assistant neutrons, 88 deputy neutrons, and 198 assistant deputy neutrons, giving it an atomic mass of 312. These 312 particles are held together by forces called morons, which are surrounded by vast quantity of lepton-like particles called pions. Since governmentium has no electrons, it is inert. However, it can be detected because it impedes every reaction with which it comes into contact. A tiny amount of governmentium can cause a reaction that would normally take less than a second to take from 4 days to 4 years to complete. Governmentium has a normal half-life of 2 to 6 years. It does not decay, but instead undergoes a reorganization in which a portion of the assistant neutrons and deputy neutrons exchange places. In fact, governmentium's mass will actually increase over time, since each reorganization will cause more morons to become neutrons, forming isotopes. The characteristics of moron promotion lead some scientists to believe that governmentium is formed whenever morons reach a critical concentration. The hypothetical quantity is referred to as critical morass. When catalyzed with money, governmentium becomes administratium, an element that radiates just as much energy as governmentium, since it has a half-life of many peons but twice as many morons. It has half as many peons but twice as many morons. They also produce czars, which are phantom. Can't really find them under the microscope. I want to thank my scientist friend Gary for sending me that. Hope everybody can enjoy that chuckle. They say, you know, open everything with a joke. And I have a few. As a matter of fact, I'm not really for the organization PETA unless they change their call letters to other words such as People for Eating Tasty Animals. I always thought it would be interesting to kind of infiltrate PETA and maybe be able to stand up and be the keynote speaker for one of their events and start off with something like, "So this baby seal walks into a club." But seriously, anyhow, I know that's not anything other than cool, but yet in the organization of PETA, it would be funny to say to them. Yes, I'm in rare form today, guys. By the way, and I will let RBN know this, I will not be here on Monday. It is Labor Day weekend. However, I'm not taking it off as a day of labor. I will not be here on Monday so I can prep for the 9/11/09 show. That is what I'll be doing all day Monday. So I will have a best of series. I have had a lot of emails asking me to talk more about AR-15s and more about the Ronin AR-15. So what I've done is compiled 5 segments all about the AR-15. So Monday, that is what you are going to hear. That's the intent, is to have you listen to nothing but AR-15 stuff. Stay tuned. I'll be back after the break.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Now, hopefully everybody took time this last weekend to dust off your flags. Please, guys, don't delay, because when the day comes on Friday to hang your flags, you don't want to be scrambling looking for it. Hopefully everything's in good shape, you're ready to roll. If not, replace it now if you haven't already. Flying the flags on Friday. So here's a little story here. Verizon Wireless sponsors anti-energy bill right-wing event by Dolores M. Bernal. Now, I'm going to read this as she wrote it. Verizon Wireless sponsored a rally in West Virginia on Labor Day that was organized by climate bill foes, which was attended by conservative Fox News personality Sean Hannity and controversial guitarist Ted Nugent. Several environmental groups had asked Verizon Wireless to pull from the event, which was put together by Massey Energy, one of the country's top coal producers. So you can already see the leftist, left-wing, environmentalist slant on this reporter. Now, this is a professional journalist, an independent journalist that sells her stories. Continuing, some 75,000 people were due to attend the Friends of America rally in Holden, West Virginia. Rally organizers called for those attending to, quote, stand up for American jobs, end quote, by opposing the energy bill that passed the House in June, H.R. 2454. The legislation was sponsored by Representative Henry Waxman and Edward Markley, and it calls for, among other things, for greater environmental accountability from coal producers. Dozens of coal companies and other industry-related businesses sponsored the event, but a coalition of over 40 environmental groups, including Greenpeace USA and the National Resources Defense Council, which is NRDC, was outraged by Verizon Wireless participation. They sent a letter to the cell phone company on Friday, asking them not to sponsor the event. Verizon did not answer the letter, and the group released a news release. The groups released a news release, saying the following. Despite the rally's name, it is not friendly to America to cling to an industry that keeps Appalachia and in a stranglehold of economic and environmental impoverishment, permanently polluting water supplies, blocking green energy development and economic diversification, and contributing to global climate change. Coal corporations are making millions of dollars off destroying the mountains and only polluting, and only pollution and poverty are trickling down to residents, said Tierra Curry, a native of eastern Kentucky and biologist at the Center for Biological Diversity. Biological diversity. You like that? Diversity is yet another left-wing word that they just love to use. Americans want clean drinking water and a transition to green economy that the planet can sustain and provide good quality, blah, 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 blah. The whole thing is, the way this entire article is written is nothing but a huge left-wing slant. So what I did was I took the liberty of doing research and finally coming across the email address of the author of this story. Again, the story's author is Dolores M. Bernal, B-E-R-N-A-L, D-O-L-O-R-E-S-M-B-E-R-N-A-L. And she is acejournalist@gmail.com. So, here's my response. Dolores, I've read some of your pieces. The most recent was entitled Verizon Wireless Sponsors Anti-Energy Bill Right-Wing Event. And the opening paragraph certainly demonstrates your personal opinion and, quite frankly, your bias. As an independent journalist, you are certainly on the right path to alienating journalistic outlets that would otherwise accept a piece written neutrally as opposed to your current style, not to mention millions of readers. Undoubtedly, you are familiar with your opening paragraph and the slant it contains. Allow me to present an alternative idea, beginning with the headline, Verizon Wireless Sponsors Controversial Event. Verizon Wireless sponsored an event in West Virginia on Labor Day, whose organizers are opposed to the cap-and-trade energy bill, and which was attended by both conservative journalist and outspoken musician Ted Nugent. Coal-rich West Virginia, home to event sponsor and top coal producer Massey Energy, saw criticism aimed at Verizon's sponsorship of the event by some environmental groups. Or, Dolores, you could consider the conservative view. Verizon Wireless supports patriotic event. On Labor Day, Verizon Wireless sponsored an event organized by West Virginia's coal giant Massey Energy to protect the ram to protest the ramrodding of June's cap and trade bill, H.R. 2454, through the House, and garnish support from journalists and informed celebrities alike, along with the 75,000 attendees. Although some environmentalist groups protested Verizon's involvement, Verizon remained steadfast in their support for the event while showing opposition to the injustice experienced in the House chambers when the 1,300-page H.R. 2454 was rammed through in a single day without evidence of even a single representative having even seen the bill. Now, Dolores, I'm sure you learned of the neutral viewpoint when in journalist courses. However, when reading something so slanted as you had written, it evokes a negative reaction when read by someone who'd support an opposing view. Case in point was how pissed you must have felt when reading the conservative view. That's how many people felt when they read your piece as published, which didn't offer any credibility to your efforts, nor will it in future articles penned by you when it shows up in front of those readers. I hope this neutrally written critique finds you well. Sincerely, Bill Carnes, host 2A Radio, blah, blah, blah. So there is my response to Dolores. And quite honestly, her lousy form of journalism. And that's just the way America is now. You've got people who write independently. Therefore, they have no bosses. But if you end up having several, you know, slanted media outlets, certainly online is easy enough to find. Printed media, certainly easy enough to find. If you're willing to gas up together a group of those different, in this case, left-leaning groups, and, of course, that's all going to be published probably within the newsletters and the speakeasies of these 40 environmental groups that opposed this particular event in West Virginia. Then, you know, go on with your bad self. However, you're going to be labeled pretty much as a very leftist journalist, and nobody's really going to give you much credibility. They're just going to read the name Dolores Bernal. And they're going to say, oh, yeah, that lefty environmentalist, and discount anything that's written if they see an opposing view. So there you go. Yeah, and that's pretty similar to things like if we ever hear, case in point, if we ever hear that ABC did anything dealing with guns, we're like, oh, yeah, that's ABC, anti-gun. We just expect that. You hear ABC news report on guns. We know for a fact it's going to be slanted. That's just the way it is, especially if it's coming out of 2020. 2020 loves to do the slams and the hit pieces. That's just the way they report. And we know that. So there's Dolores and her leftist-leaning stuff. Good for you. Happy to see that you're, you know, in your little cushion there, Miss Muffet. However, I really just like getting people's goats and kind of zinging them with their own style or their own words, which is why I wrote the conservative view, and I'm sure that she was taken aback by that, or will be when she gets her butt up and reads her mail. So I'm hoping to get a response. If I get a response, certainly you're going to know about it because I'm going to talk about it right here. So there we go. I was very happy to see that these guys put this event together. And that Ted Nugent showed up is a great thing. You know, I got to tell you, one thing that I really appreciate about Ted Nugent is not only just his straight-up honesty, doesn't mince words, doesn't pull punches, doesn't try to, you know, reword the things that he would otherwise just say in normal conversation. He just says it. He has one form of communication, and it's straight, it's from his heart, and it's honest. That's just the way Ted Nugent is. And he lends himself, his name, and his celebrity to all kinds of events that people like us, the people who are more clearly thinking, see all the different points of a view on a particular topic and take the most sensible one, and he lends his name to come out and actually support these things. I'm really looking forward to what undoubtedly Ted Nugent has to say at the Second Amendment March coming up this spring in Washington, D.C. Looking forward to that quite a bit. Another march that's going to be going on Washington, D.C. is going to be on Saturday the 12th. If you happen to be in the D.C. area, that is going to be another pro-American, we're kind of against the whole way that D.C. and everybody on Capitol Hill is looking to ramrod all of these lousy bills down our throats. The most recent of which, of course, is this healthcare reform. It is socialized medicine. It is not reform. It's going to go down the tubes. Just like Social Security went down the tubes. Just like all the other government programs such as welfare have gone down the tubes. These are things that are nothing but a drain on you and me and everybody else. It's a drain on the financial resources of this country. And it's something that just absolutely should not happen. And what's happening now is there's been so much discussion over the last 2 months on this particular issue that the so-called conservatives, the Republicans that are on the Hill, are trying to come up with some sort of appeasement so that the Democrats can get their bill through, but it won't be quite as bad as otherwise. So we're going to get stuck with something if we don't all stand up. So if you're going to be in the D.C. area, or you're already in the D.C. area this Saturday, September 12th of 09, this rally is going to be going on to support the people who do not like this sort of thing, which is essentially 85% of the American citizens right here in the U.S. So I would invite you to go down and march for what are your rights and cause the people in D.C. to actually set up and take notice. The more people that are there, the more they're going to notice. More coming at you after the break. Stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes right here live on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
I'm going to read to you a couple of opposing stories here. One is called Spinning Self-Defense into a Crime. This has to deal with the shooting down at Texas State last week. When a company by the name of Old Media wants to re-educate people on how the unnecessary regressive behavior of self-defense is inappropriate in today's civilized society, it is important to dredge up experts, as they would call it, to make their case. Such was the case with KVUE, and KVUE did the best job that they could finding a Texas State student to pontificate the following. I'm sure the shooting was in self-defense, but I'm very against that because they took two lives, and who knows if this kid in the hospital is going to survive, said student Alejandro Salazar. To his credit, Salazar apparently corrects himself in the comments section, and here's the commenter says, a Salazar 32 wrote the following in the comments section. I am not against self-defense. I did not realize what I said. The Statesman found that an ex-student, the Statesman is another outlet agency, they found that an ex-student who used to live on the same street said the following, quote, it's peaceful type of stuff around here. I hear every once in a while that a house gets broken into, but it's usually for stupid stuff like a TV. Of course, no mention was made regarding the credentials of that particular poster as an investigator or forensic psychologist. So, here's some actual news stories right here for you. A concealed carry permit holder, you know what I should do is let me actually recap what this was about in case you didn't understand, you don't really know what happened down there. What happened was there was three people that were all roommates in a house. Four bad guys broke into this house. And this was about, 1:15, 1:30 in the morning. Two of the three roommates were up and out. One of them was in his bedroom. When these four guys broke in, three of the four guys that broke in had guns. So there's a bunch of commotion going on. The one roommate back in his bedroom isn't sure what's going on, grabs his gun and comes out of his door. When he opens the door, he's facing one of the bad guys who's pointing a gun at him. So he shoots him and the other two guys with guns. They don't shoot. The bad guys don't shoot anything. So it was 1-on-3, what we refer to as a target-rich environment, multiple bad guys. But for every bad guy that was in there that was armed, there was an equal number of people that were not armed. Another one was a bad guy, however, the other two were his roommates. So he had to make this decision-making sort of affair with other people that didn't need to get shot in the downrange area. And he shoots the three with guns. Two of them are dead. One of them is alive. And that's the way the ball bounces. That's somebody who had the mental discipline. They were prepared for this sort of thing. You don't think you'll get woken up in the middle of the night and have to shoot in and around multiple armed bad guys and either friends or family, roommates, people who were there? Tell that story to this person. So that's what that story was written about. You know, I understand it was self-defense, but I don't know that we need to do that in today's civilized society. Today's society is not civilized. We have a civilized foundational society, but there are people within our society in every town, every city, every burg that are not civilized. So just remember that. And here's another little tidbit on concealed carry. Concealed carry permit holder saves a manager from a dangerous car attack. A citizen with a concealed carry permit used his handgun to save a grocery store manager who was being intentionally run down by a shoplifter's car in Independence, Missouri, said the police. Police said that 41-year-old Lucinda Carroll and a friend went to the Sun Fresh store to shoplift meat, and the manager caught them in the act. The manager is said to have followed the shoplifters to the parking lot to get their license plate number while yelling at them to stop for someone to call the police. Police say that Carroll drove the vehicle into the manager, striking her in the leg and pinning her to the hood of the car. Fortunately for the manager, William Miller was nearby and had a concealed carry permit. For those of you who don't know, hitting somebody with a car is called battery with a deadly weapon. Miller used his truck to block the parking lot exit, drew his handgun, and repeatedly told Carroll to get out of the car, according to police. Fearing for his own life and the life of the manager who had been attacked with the car, Miller fired at Carroll, striking her on the shoulder, putting an end to the violent attack, police said. The local prosecutor has indicated that Carroll will be facing charges once she's released from the hospital, and that Miller will face no charges for his lawful and heroic actions. So there you go. Yet again, another CCW holder saves the day, and a lot of times this sort of thing doesn't get reported because why would you report to the police a crime that didn't happen, a crime that was stopped, a crime that just was in its infancy to begin and somebody with a CCW stops it? Reason is a lot of cops and a lot of assistant DAs would like to go after CCW holders because they don't like them, so they don't even bother telling them. However, tell this and many, many stories like it to the people that complain about how CCW holders are dangerous. They'll make a dangerous society having more people with guns. Just ignorant jackasses. More to come after the break. Stay tuned.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
The Senate is going to vote on an anti-gun kook for the regulatory czar, adding yet another czar, into the mid-30s now with these czars. So, pardon me, just when you thought that news about the Obama administration couldn't get any worse, gun owners find themselves needing to rally the troops yet again. This time, it's the proposed regulatory czar who will be coming to a vote later this week in the U.S. Senate. His name is Cass Sunstein, and he holds some of the kookiest views you're ever going to hear. For starters, Sunstein believes in regulating hunting out of existence. He told a Harvard audience in 2007 that, quote, we ought to ban hunting, end quote, and the rights of animals, a very short premiere in a movie called The Rights of Animals, which is a very short premiere, back in 2002, he said the following, I think we should go further. The law should impose further regulation on hunting, scientific experiments, entertainment, and, above all, farming to ensure against unnecessary animal suffering. It is easy to imagine a set of initiatives that would do a great deal here, and indeed European nations have moved in just this direction. There are many possibilities. If that's all Sunstein believed, he would be a danger and an extremist, but not necessarily kooky. Unfortunately, would you have to look at why he wants to restrict hunting, and this is where it goes beyond extreme. In Sunstein's world, animals should have just as many rights as humans, and they should be able to sue humans in court. Now, this is a guy who is a law professor, right? He's worked at the law school in Chicago, at Harvard, at Columbia, all these really left-leaning law schools. And he's also a constitutional attorney. He's a constitutional law scholar. Obviously reading from the left end, the left margin of the Constitution. I don't get it. This is what he says. We could even grant animals a right to bring suit without insisting that animals are persons or that they are not property. Sunstein said on page 11 of Animal Rights, The Current Debate and New Direction in 2004. Can you imagine? How is an animal without the ability to just cognitive thought be able to file a lawsuit or understand a court process? This is where this guy's really over the edge. Okay, what a relief. At least he's willing to concede that animals are not persons. But he would still have animals suing humans, apparently, with more enlightened humans representing the cuddly little creatures. Imagine returning from a successful hunting trip, only to find that you've been subpoenaed for killing your prize. Who knows, maybe Sunstein would have the family of the dead animals serving as witnesses in court, perhaps even filing a lawsuit against you. By the way, if you're wondering what he thinks about the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, you won't be surprised to know that Sunstein is a huge supporter of gun control. In Radicals in Robes, Why Extreme Right-Wing Courts Are Wrong for America in 2005, Sunstein says the following. Almost all gun control legislation is constitutionally fine. On the Constitution's text, fundamentalists, that is, gun rights supporters, should not be so confident in their enthusiasm for invalidating gun control legislation. Really? What part of shall not be infringed doesn't this guy understand? Imagine the power that Sunstein could have as the regulatory czar. The nickname for the person heading the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, or OIRA, in the White House. As the regulatory czar, he could bring about changes in the regulations that affect hunting, gun control, and farming. In short, he could make all of our lives hell. Senator Saxby Chambliss, however you want to pronounce it, Republican of Georgia, objected to this guy's nomination several weeks ago, preventing him from being unanimously confirmed. That means that the Senate will now need to garner 60 votes to confirm this radical kook as the choice to head the OIRA. No doubt many of the people our de facto president wants to associate with are radical kooks. First there was Reverend Jeremiah Wright, then there was a self-avowed communist Van Jones, who was nominated for the Green Job Czar. Now there's an extreme animal rights activist who wants to take our rights and our guns to get Bambi and give them the rights to sue us in court. And guys, I got to tell you, it's time to take a strong stand against this sort of radical administration. Please, 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 at the very least, email your senators about this guy and tell them no way. All right? Tell them no way. truly the first line of defense in the United States are you and I, the citizens. They say the first responders. The first responders are the people who respond there first. Now, they refer to the first responders as the people who respond there first from some sort of governmental agency, be it city, county, state, federal, whatever. As a matter of fact, I used to run first what were called first responder courses at work with these things at Dugway Proving Ground for if there was a form of terrorist attack, like a CST team, or what is essentially CST would be like a National Guard team that has gone through chemical, biological, radiological sort of training. They are far from the first responders. In fact, they are some of the very last responders, but it was called first responder training. Because if we called it that, we could actually get global war on terror money and train these people, and they needed to be trained. Really, the first responders are the people who are there at the moment when it goes on that would respond to any bad guys. And I say that to preface this next story, which is entitled, Terrorists Are Shifting Their Focus to Soft Targets. Terrorists are aiming for hotels and other easy-to-hit targets, as security measures at military and government facilities continue to improve, says a global intelligence company. Al-Qaeda is changing from a centralized organization with global goals to regional franchises with more just farcical aims and strong grassroots support, according to a report that came out just a couple days ago from Stratfor. Actually, you know, this report just came out yesterday. These smaller cells get less training and less money, so they set their sights a bit lower. This means that they are dangerous, particularly if they're attempting to prove their value or they're able to link up with someone who is highly and tactically skilled. According to the Stratfor report, the number of attacks on hotels has more than doubled since the 9/11 attacks in 2001, when compared with the 8 years before. Injuries and deaths caused by those attacks have increased six times over the same comparison period. A hotel is the ultimate soft target for Islamic extremists. A fixed location, lots of human traffic, and shallow security perimeters. Hotels also attract many Westerners, giving militants high probabilities of killing or injuring large numbers of them in a single attack, according to the report. Now, why would they want to kill Westerners? Well, because we are considered the infidel. We are non-believers, and the jihad, their holy war, is against us, the non-believing infidels. So, what we do is we go to a hotel on business or pleasure, and they see that as an opportunity to strike and kill us when we're not expecting it. It is the ultimate sucker punch of death. How cowardly. Although hotel security guards are trying to monitor suspicious people and activities, extremists know their way around this is to check in as a guest, giving them full access to the grounds. As an example, the report says that bombers who carried out the July 17th twin suicide attacks, actually that should be written homicide attacks, at the JW Marriott and Ritz-Carlton hotels in Jakarta, Indonesia, had registered 2 days earlier. Imagine that. From a terrorist perspective, the downside to hitting soft targets is that the attacks don't generate as much political and ideological mileage as hitting a hard target such as a better guarded government building or military facility. Despite the increasing attacks in hotels, the report says many owners and managers have been reluctant to equip their buildings with more security measures, which can be cumbersome and inconvenience guests, as well as be expensive. And a lot of them don't arm their guards, their hotel security. What good is that? All is another set of eyes. They get used to seeing the same damn thing all the time. But the mentalities may have to change with these hotels. An attorney representing the victims of a hotel attack in 2004 has demanded that the owner accept responsibility for the security and belongings of its guests. Terrorism-related liability considerations, which could be called a hushed concern among hotel industry insiders since 9/11, are becoming a much more predominant issue, according to this report. So there we go. Terrorists are going after soft targets. And this ain't the first time. Where do soft targets get hit on a regular basis? It's in a little place called Israel, where they get hit, these soft targets get hit on a regular basis. However, they're really doing their very, very best to try to secure the inlets and the inroads of these would-be terrorists. How do you do that around the world in these large hotels? How do you do that? Well, here's the deal. If you are in the area and you are armed, you have an opportunity to stop somebody. Now, a lot of people look at the numbers as well. I've had this argument with, I shouldn't say argument, but it's been a debate with other industry guys. Some of them believe the way I do. Some of them believe the opposing view I'm about to share with you. And that is, if you are faced with the, at the moment where these terrorists would all of a sudden, okay, here we go, we're going to start. And let's say that they begin by going through the hotel and they start gathering people up. The early moments and mayhem of what's going on. And you're armed. Should you engage right then and there? Or should you bide your time, go along, hope that they don't find your gun, and then once they're all together, come up with a plan? Okay, I am not for option B. Wait till everybody's together and then formulate a plan. My personal, I shouldn't say personal, my professional opinion is what I would do and what trained people should do is to engage at the moment that they realize somebody needs to be engaged. If they find you and they find that you are armed, most likely you're just going to be dead. So the chance, and also if you end up then getting into a group setting, where you can see all of these guys, what's your plan going to be now? You might be faced with one or two or three or four guys right now. You might be faced with 15, 20, 30 of them later once you're all together. Now, how does one guy handle that? All it can really do is go downhill. And more people are also going to die along the way. So my professional opinion on this sort of deal, and I used to train people with Department of Defense in this sort of thing, my professional opinion is, at the moment you realize there's bad guys that need to get engaged, start engaging. As soon as you have the ability to, start engaging. This is not just willy-nilly pull out a gun and start blasting rounds. Especially in a terrorist event. That is where you are destined to have multiple targets. So ammunition management is highly important. Highly important. And I'll give you an interesting little sidebar here. The way that the anti-terror squads are actually being trained now, the anti-terror good guys, the common response is two shots to the head. One works, but if you don't get a good shot with the first round, the second one should back it up. Oftentimes you take the first shot, you line up for the second shot, and they're not there anymore. So you don't bother taking it. But the common response for anti-terrorist interdiction is two to the head. Because that is an instant lights out, it's done. Even if you got a good shot into the boiler room, into the thorax there. If you got a good couple of shots into there, that doesn't necessarily put somebody out. They could still be able to move around and do things for 20 to 30 seconds, even with two good rounds in the chest. Such as fire off a bomb, be it strapped to themselves or they have a remote detonator. So the standard terrorist interdiction that's been going on through anti-terror squads is, again, two to the head. You fire once, if it's still there, fire again. And quite honestly, if it's still there, you'd fire yet again because your first two shots sucked and didn't do what they needed to do. Anyhow, keep in mind that you just wouldn't want to blaze if you've got, say, let's even say you've got a Glock or an XD or something like that where you've got, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17 rounds of ammunition in the gun. You want to lay three or four into this guy, three or four into that guy, three or four into the other guy, because now you're down, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 rounds. You've only got one or two more guys at max you could shoot. And chances are there's going to be more. So ammunition management is incredibly important. Of course, if you put some of these guys down, say you've got a handgun, put a couple of these guys down and they've got some form of rifle, at your earliest safe convenience, you pick that rifle up. And you go to town with it. You use that. Ballistic superiority. And you do your best to make the other rifles unusable. such as taking the magazines out and removing the round from the chamber. So if anybody grabs that gun, it's going to be basically a blunt object, a blunt instrument for them to use, unless they have more ammunition on them. You don't just leave them around ready to go. Keep that in mind. Don't leave guns ready to roll if you actually have a moving, long-term sort of engagement kind of a plan. Keep that in mind. So back to it. My plan is to engage as early as possible. Once you realize something's going on, you can come up with a very quick tactical assessment and engage from there. Because that's really the time when all the surprise, before these guys are knowing if their plan's really going to work, you're in the process of foiling it. It starts falling apart for them. It starts working for you. If you take too much time and you get everyone together, then they're able to figure out how to handle crowd control. It takes far less people. They're able to handle riot control. It takes far less people. They're able to handle the insurgency of the good guys. It takes far less people. And there's also far less of them to kill you or anybody else around there. So that's, again, been kind of a debate amongst that I've had with several other guys in the industry. And the vast majority of them tend to take my view of, yeah, as soon as you realize people need to start getting shot in an event like that, come up with a very rapid tactical assessment and start shooting them. So there you go. And again, standard terrorist interdiction response by the organized groups are two to the head. I've taught that. That's what I employ. Anyhow, more to come after the break. Stay tuned.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam's out in the shoot, maybe a
little too well. Finger on the trigger, loaded. And welcome back from the break, guys. There's a lot of things that you need to realize in this world, if you haven't already, that the place is dangerous. It might be dangerous from the guy at the street or the guy in the apartment next door, a couple doors down, that you just don't know. It might be dangerous, pardon me, it might be dangerous for your kids when they go to school, when you're picking them up and dropping them off. It might be dangerous because terrorists are out there, and they're now going after the softer targets. And it might be dangerous just due to a random act of violence. Right? So although it's a civilized society, the more things get constricted and the tighter the grip of society becomes, the more things slip through people's fingers. And you've got to have some sort of a plan. I want to thank Pete for an email that he sent to me that I read last night. Pete sent me an email last night, something along the lines of, I've got to paraphrase because when Pete and I email, we are very candid in our emails. So I've got to paraphrase along the lines of, basically, owning guns, but now needing to get the training. And time seems to be getting very short, because it very well may be tomorrow, or next week, or the week after that, that you might need to employ these skills. You might need to defend your life, the life of your loved ones, immediately. And the longer that you put off the training, where you get not just the physical skill to run the gun, but the tactical skills, as well as the mental preparation on how to do this. The longer you put that off, you're doing yourself a disservice to the point where you will not be able to perform at an acceptable level, a survivable level, and putting down the bad guys when you most need it. You know, there's an old saying, we are going to revert to your level of training. Some people say to your lowest level of training. The lowest level of training is no training at all. I don't really buy the lowest level of training. But you are going to revert to your level of training when the fecal matter strikes the air conditioner. And if you don't have any training or your training is meager, that's the way you're going to perform. All right? I was at a gun show this last weekend, and you know, we were putting together, I'm going to share more information with you as it comes along and builds, with a new training organization that I am partnering in. A new startup organization with a couple other guys that are really high-end guys. So we're going to be training right out of Las Vegas. Point being that a lot of people, as we're talking about this, one guy came up and said, oh, you know, I got all that training when I was in the military. Back in the Army, and he left in 1965. But he believes he'll be able to draw on that now in his 60s. Not so sure that's going to work. But you never know. Maybe we'll see. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thanks for spending your morning with me. I'll be back tomorrow. Tune in then.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.